All right, we are back in open session and no action will be taken on the executive session. All right, Billy, you ready to go to waste management?
I am.
Okay.
We've been actually really busy because of all the debris from the fire coming in from Hoback Ranches. Mm-hmm.
Has there been substantial amounts?
Yes. As of yesterday, we're over 1,000 tons that's come in. We're keeping track of the houses. We make them give us the address. We got the list that Casey gave us. And so we're up to 20 homes that have come in. Like 17 of them are totally in, but they're working. The other three they just started bringing us. It's mainly 85% of it's just metal and concrete.
What didn't burn?
Yes.
Gotcha.
So, it's a lot of sorting. Got two Tracos sorting. Our biggest thing was we were kind of overwhelming. Iden, he brought extra containers, but we're loading like four containers a day, so I got side dumps down there also hauling.
Okay.
But we're keeping up. It's going well. It's kind of working good because it's, it's kind of worried about our C&D pit filling up too fast, but it's, most of the metal's going out, and that's the majority of the stuff except for the concrete. We haven't had to be worried about the, nothing smoldering anymore, so that's good. But so it's busy down there. That's with our other trash coming in and everything. It's we're keeping up. So it's and the way the weather's going, they're hoping to keep going hot and heavy up there.
Can you say who the contractors are that are in?
Right now there's like M&M, Aramco, Tri-County, Yellow out of Jackson, and then there's some little private kind of, some just little guys. It's kind of our big range. The big ones, is like Co and Tri-County and M&M are bringing the most stuff in every day. But so
you say there was how many cleaned up?
Right now we got a total of 17 totally cleaned up, and we had three new ones start showing up yesterday. So we're up to 20 homes. So they're doing it, but so we're keeping up there. The only other thing I really got for waste management is I got just one more for a trailer that we budgeted for, and then we should have all the equipment bought for this year. And this is just a construction trailer, mainly. It'd be great if we had it right now for all the hauling that we're doing, but mainly for the tires and the pallets and stuff that we got to move around and everything. Right now I'm using the Roan Bridge side dumps, but
this is just open top.
Just a construction trailer, and it's a 95 yard, so basically one load is like three of our side dumps. So it's
is it the kind of dumps like could tip over easy?
It is what it is. Yeah, you just gotta be careful. But they're really good. It'd be very really good asset for down there. And Tri-State was the cheapest on the trailer.
Okay. Where are they out of?
Casper.
Okay. Alright.
They spec the same?
They're all spec the same, yep.
Almost 20,000 under estimate.
Yes, yes.
Looks like they're all the same.
Yep, they're all the same trailer. There's only a couple companies that make them, and this one met my spec. It's just more safer the way they dump, and they don't tip over, and they're just built better. So it met, these were the only ones that met my spec, but they were
okay.
Cheaper.
All right, gentlemen.
Mr. Chairman, I'd make the motion that we accept the bid from Tri-State Truck and Equipment on the construction trailer in the amount of $66,462.47.
Second. It has been moved and seconded that we accept the bid from Tri-State Truck and Equipment on the construction trailer in the amount of $66,462.47. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries.
That's all I can
get.
Well, I got DQ still doing their review, and we're going to work through that this winter because they wanted them to give them some time so they could not be overwhelmed with everything. And then the only thing, we're going to have to put that second lysimeter in probably next year because we had a 5-year window to put both of them in, and we're coming up against that. So this spring we'll get those plans put out and probably get that next summer so we can prove that we're not going to leak any water onto the trash and
right.
go from there.
Right.
And that's all I got. We budgeted in this last budget.
Right. Okay, perfect. But well, we don't want to overwhelm DEQ. So.
Nope, stay on your good side.
Yeah. We do want a final approval.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
Yeah. All right.
Keep working, good. Working our way there.
Thank you, gentlemen. Thanks. All I got. Appreciate it. Anything nice. Else, Mark? You're good?
We're good. Thank
okay,
you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. What's that? Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. See you later. Sheriff, we're a little ahead of schedule. If you'd like to come up, I do need to ask Dave, what was that contraption you had hooked up there? Because that was on during executive session.
It's a cellular modem, but I'm just trying to get on a network because I can't get on the county network.
Okay,
so
all right.
There was no recording.
I just got a double check
no,
here.
Sorry about that. I didn't
when new electronics come in the room, I get a little nervous.
You were live streamed, no big deal.
Yeah, no big deal. Executive session is now on the internet.
I hope you guys were using your good language.
No.
All right. How are you, Casey?
Good morning to everybody.
Yeah.
So just to kind of catch everybody up, so helicopter contract ended on October 15th. As of September, between September 1 and October 15th, search and rescue had over 15 missions.
So it was a good thing we had it
yeah,
into October then.
Yeah, we used it a lot this year.
Okay.
So I think more so than any other year. And that's not only us, but surrounding counties as well. I know we helped out Park, Lincoln, Fremont, Teton. Everybody that touches us, we helped, so.
Johnson.
Yeah, right.
Yep.
So,
excellent.
No, and really good feedback from Idaho, Johnson County. Very impressed with our personnel and our equipment. So, yeah, that was really nice to hear.
Good.
On another note, so on September 28th, the Wyoming Legislature Joint Agricultural Committee met in Powell. Two committee members were there, and they were very interested in discussing future of law enforcement and livestock investigations. I couldn't attend because of the fire, but I sent two of our representatives, and they were very interested in what we've been doing with the livestock checks, how we've been working with our brand inspectors, other counties to try to create this task force. It's not something that's widely agreed upon throughout the state, just because their sheriff's offices that simply cannot, they do not have the manpower to
right.
do what we're doing.
Right.
However, our goals is, agriculture is, Joel's Wells is one of our trifectas of Sublette County, and I'm not going to sit idly by and wait for the state to get livestock inspectors when we have cattle being stolen and horses coming in without the proper testing and vaccinations. So we'll continue to do that, and
okay.
we'll wait to hear on what the state has to say and where we go. So.
Okay. Very good.
Mr. Chairman, in that regard, I'd just relate. Happened to have a conversation with one of our brand inspectors yesterday, and he had ridden with Mike, had been out with some of your deputies, and
yep.
he thinks it's getting better. The one thing to consider, there's no statute in Wyoming and the livestock board rules that require any paperwork unless you're leaving the county. So if you put your horse in the trailer and I'm coming up to help you brand,
yeah, we're okay.
You know, we don't need papers, so okay. We got to figure out, you know,
right.
How do you, if a deputy, if law enforcement pulls somebody over and asks for their papers, I guess there has to be some assumption that they're intending to leave the county or coming into the county or,
right.
I don't know how we're going to work that out.
Yeah,
but
the biggest,
it sounds like
the biggest hurdle is proof of ownership.
Right.
And you're exactly right. I mean, because there's ranchers here and there that raise horses. They've never had a brand. They've
right.
never had an inspection.
Yeah.
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 How do you prove?
There's home raised. I've got home raised
right.
too that have never
oh,
had
yeah.
a brand inspection.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. No, believe me, that's gone. Yeah. That's gone through the county attorneys all the way up to the AG. So
gotcha.
We're trying to get that better defined.
Cool.
So
working on it.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Good. Good. Glad to hear that.
Yeah. Betty Mosica, who was our secretary down in Marbleton, is going to retire here in December.
Right.
So I kind of just want to get your feelings on filling that position. I do feel that a face down there is needed, whether it is a full-time position or a part-time position, that's to be discussed or talked
is
about.
Is it full-time right now?
Currently it is full-time.
Okay.
Yes.
What's your thoughts on possibly going to a part-time down there, Isaac? Could you still get what you needed done with a part-time position or not?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
All right.
Yeah.
Sounds good. Do you have anybody internally that you would move into that, or would you need to open that?
No, that would be an open.
Okay.
Yeah, we open that up to the public.
All right.
Yeah.
Very good. Okay. I think if you can do it part-time, that'd be awesome.
Okay.
That'd be great.
All right. Yeah, if that's agreeable with everybody here, then
oh, yeah.
I'm good with that too.
Good with me.
Do it.
Kay. What you need to get the job done.
Okay.
Right.
All right. Okay. Other than that, I don't know if we want to wait for Shad's turn,
okay.
or I think Dave had some things for Harris, the Harris radio system.
I think we'll wait for Shad
okay.
on that.
Okay. I can wait. Yeah.
I have a couple questions for you on just a couple of vouchers. The search and rescue, we bought a dry suit for ice divers.
Yes.
And do we have certified rescue ice divers on the team?
Yes, we do.
Okay. How
yes.
many do we have?
That are certified. So I know for at least two
okay.
that are certified. There possibly are more.
Okay. Dive Rescue International certified or, do you
well,
know?
I can't answer that.
Yeah.
Andy, I'm not sure what the association.
Okay.
I can find out, though.
Is that a suit that both could wear? Are they different sized fellers? Is this for one particular person?
That's a good question. I think it's
okay.
one size per individual.
Usually is.
Right.
Yeah, usually is, unless you got two guys that are exactly the same size. But
yeah.
Anyway, I didn't know if...
So are they doing actual diving or just river rescue or...
Yeah, so
each one's got their kit.
Correct. So this isn't it's not a diver.
Not,
they don't go submerged.
Right.
This is
okay.
specifically for ice rescue. Mm-hmm. Yep.
This is an ice rescue suit,
right.
not
Correct.
A dive.
Not a dive suit.
Not a dive suit. Ah, okay.
Because
yeah.
we use Rock Springs divers for
yes.
that. Now,
yeah, we
right.
do not have any certified divers.
Divers. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. That was my question.
Okay.
Perfect.
So what's an ice rescue suit? What's that do? What is it?
If they splash into the water to get somebody out.
Or if they fall in.
Well.
It's like an insulated.
Like if somebody breaks through the ice and somebody goes out that's going to rescue them, they've got this suit on.
Okay. Like a wetsuit.
Yes.
It would be the same
okay.
suit as a diver would wear, just not being utilized as that resource.
Correct.
Right.
Yep.
Okay.
Just keeps
okay.
them from going into hypothermic shock when
sure.
they go into
gotcha.
Water.
All right. And I just noticed that there was a charge for reimbursement of a deputy's sunglasses that were lost.
Okay.
And I would like you to...
I'll look into that.
That,
you,
that was on a search and rescue.
Oh, it was?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Happened to be a deputy that's a search and rescue guy.
Okay. They was
doing
duties
search
at search and rescue and
mm-hmm.
lost the sunglasses.
Yeah.
All right.
We've replaced equipment that they've lost in the past.
I can check in at UJIT, and that's, the equipment is reimbursed by the state.
And the state reimburses.
Whether it's personal property or not. So are we going to get paid back for those sunglasses then?
Yep, we will. We'll get paid back from the search and rescue account.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very good.
Damn, you're tight.
You're telling me. Well, I'm not buying somebody sunglasses, okay?
Okay. The state's going to buy them.
Fair enough, yeah.
All right.
I thought the county clerk was the tightest one in this.
No, it's not. It's,
no,
it's
me.
It's me. Tighter than skin on sausage. I know. Okay, that was all I had. Sheriff, any questions for the sheriff?
You talked about all of the counties that have used our helicopter.
Mm-hmm.
Do they not have that?
No. No, besides us in Teton County, the only counties in the state
two counties
to have a contract helicopter.
So we use SRS money to fund that program.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Where do they use their SRS money?
Other things.
Okay.
But they get tons. So one of the examples is Fremont County. Fremont County gets way more SRS money than we do.
They use their SRS money in contracting our helicopter.
And they contract with us. You know, that's what they, you know, they contract with us for that. But
just curious.
Yeah.
And our SRS money does not cover all of that.
No, because it's our SRS money and then the money that we make renting the helicopter mm-hmm. out to others.
Yep.
And then we get money from the Search and Rescue Council for our missions that qualify to pay for the sunglasses. And then we do have some expense, but when you look at what that expense is compared to if we were going to have to go out and contract with a helicopter, you know, contract with somebody else for that helicopter, it works.
Yeah.
The more we can spread it around and
well, that's just
get other counties to help pay.
Right. It allowed us that 15 extra days in October.
Sure.
From the time we rented it out, so to speak, that we were able to, you know, utilize it when we needed it.
Well, we've leased it to the YDOT, to the Game and Fish.
Right.
Our contract, though.
Yeah, communications outfit. Yeah.
We're not required to provide the maintenance on that helicopter.
No. That is all Air Resources. Yep.
Do you have any idea what it ends up costing the county, costing us after SRS, after all these other things? Because it still costs us a little bit.
It costs us a little bit, but it's under, I can tell you it's under $100,000, but I don't know the number. But now that we're at the end of the contract, let me run that number again.
Would you run that number?
Yeah, because it would be curious to know.
I'd like to know what.
Because we had a lot of partners this year.
Had a lot of good partners. That
and
helps.
We had a lot of action, you know.
And some summers we don't have many partners.
Right. So, but yeah, and we also will have a pretty sizable reimbursement request from the state council for just Sublette County stuff, which sometimes doesn't happen. We're sitting here renting our helicopter to everybody else. But there's some other issues that go along with us having the helicopter here, though, is that during fire season, you can't get a helicopter, you know? And that was one of the things that started this whole discussion years ago was that you get towards the end of the year when we've got hikers in the mountains and all those things going on. All the helicopters are fighting fire.
Right.
There isn't anybody
And it could be now that it seems like every year we get more counties that are realizing the value of it, like Johnson County, and we could, you know, hopefully we can reach a point where they're willing to chip in and pay some of the standby time to where they're sharing in the contract. That would be the optimum situation.
Well, you know, we tried that gig at the beginning to get the state to participate through the Search and Rescue Council with paying for our standby. And there wasn't much of a, you know, but at that point in time, you know, it was pie in the sky. We're seeing it.
Now we're seeing the benefits.
We've done missions, you know, we did a mission for Albany County some years ago. We've done stuff for Natrona. We've done missions all over the state over the last 5 or 6 years. And it's like, okay, now do you want to talk about this Western Wyoming helicopter and the summer helicopter? Because Teton County doesn't have a summer helicopter.
Correct.
They have a winter helicopter because that's when their biggest use is. But they have access to park copters. But still, those guys aren't available when there's fire.
Right.
You know, we stand behind fire, you know, so it's, there's a lot involved with that, but there may be some more interest amongst your commissioner friends to say, hey, you know, what's it worth to us to continue, us, what's it worth to you for us to
continue doing
keep, yeah, to keep this contract going, and, you know, so. I'm on a soapbox, sorry.
Are we on a priority system? In other words, if we have a search in Sublette County,
we're first.
Oh, yeah.
An hour later, Fremont County calls, we're doing Sublette County first.
Correct. Yeah. So that's our agreement. So all these, right. You know, whether we help YDOT, we help Lincoln County set some equipment for the towers,
yeah.
That it's written into that mutual agreement that if, you know, if something were to happen in Sublette County, we would pull that resource mm-hmm. and they would help us first.
All right. Well, let's take a 5-minute break and then we'll reconvene with Shad. Does anybody need a break? If you don't need a break, we'll just move Shad right on up here.
Oh, look at that.
Yeah.
Depends how long Shad stays.
You're right. How are you, Chef?
I'm good.
Yeah, Chef.
Rested up?
I actually am. I'm just kind of surprised how much sleep I've been able to get. I'm taking naps that I don't expect. Just a standard county fire warden report, or is
yeah,
there,
start yeah. with whatever you want.
Okay. Well, with Casey here, I guess I'll do the written
yeah,
report.
Let's do that. Then we can get Casey back.
Okay. Okay. Let me hand these up then. Casey, what should we figure? Sorry, I figured I had a couple minutes there. I wasn't.
We're a little ahead of schedule.
Okay. So, to get started here, if you recall, last month I presented a radio report that actually came from the project manager of Harris that's in charge of implementation here. We're continuing that, so every month they're giving us their own progress report, and I'm just briefing the Board of Commissioners on that. So you can go through here and kind of see some of the current updates. As you'll note, the things that are highlighted there, the fleet mapping, the customer design review, the factory testing, and then the shipment from the warehouse are all highlighted there in yellow. Those dates have all been moved back fairly significantly. We were originally looking to do those in fall this year, and you know, because of delays with tower development and with you know, with the Roosevelt fire, everything's been moved back to a realistic time frame. I personally believe those dates are pretty realistic. I'm actually thinking that it's unlikely that we'll push them again, but. What that in reality means is originally we were scheduled to be done with the system, you know, beginning of January 2019, and with this it'll be more likely after the spring melt off, you know, is completed and the muddy roads are dried up enough to get access and finish some of the system installation. So we'll be looking at summertime next year to finalize the project build. But really, there's been, you know, a couple of minor updates in the system, you know, a couple of change orders that have occurred, you know, a change from a propane generator to a diesel generator and little things like that. You know, the reason why the change there occurred is for standardization on the county's maintenance fleet of, you know, having, you know, parts and service available and standardization of fuel and so little things like that. And it makes sense that we just, you know, missed when we did the initial implementation there.
This might be a good time to fill you gentlemen in. Also, Shad and I are in contact frequently on this project, and a lot of times Shad will call me and he'll say, okay, we're looking forward to move forward with this part of the project. And I just reassure him that we've already voted to go forward with all of this stuff. It's courtesy that Shad's calling me and saying this is what we're doing, but I'm just telling, I told him that he doesn't need our go ahead to move forward with certain phases of this project. We've already voted on it, we're going, so I've pretty much given Shad given him his head to move forward as he needs to with this project. If anybody has any contrary thoughts to that, this would be the time to say. Okay.
One thing I wanted to emphasize with the board today is that we did get the final decision from the U.S. Forest Service on the White Pine application for an extension. So we received the final signed letter that allows us to remove the existing 60-foot tower that's up there and move to a 150-foot tower. So we've had a couple of meetings already between Dave and myself and the sheriff, and Dave's working diligently to put together plans and work to get progress on that tower before the weather closeout occurs. I don't know when that's going to occur. We'll do everything we can to continue to make as much progress as we can. But eventually, if the weather closeout does occur, then obviously we'll have to shut down for a while. But the best laid plans of mice and men, I guess. But we do plan to continue to try to get as much progress done on those towers as we can. The Kismet Tower was burned in the Roosevelt Fire. As a result of that, the shelter on the Kismet Tower was destroyed and needs to be replaced. And so part of that replacement, we're hoping to integrate into the new build out of the new system. So we'll have to work with the BLM to make sure we understand what that looks like. But we will definitely try to rebuild up there. But we want to make sure that when we rebuild, that it meets the requirements of the new system.
What type of insurance coverage do we have on that? What kind of help are we going to get?
Well, we have submitted everything to the adjuster that he's asked for at this point.
And we I just don't really know.
Yeah, we don't know what they're actually going to pay.
Okay.
But I'm not so sure that some of this wouldn't fall under some other pots of funds that we've got available to deal with fire.
Well, we were going to have to upgrade that site anyway. So.
Yeah, so it's kind of...
Yeah. But whatever they can,
kind of part of the project, but whatever they'll help us with.
Okay.
They'll help us with something.
Right.
But I don't know at this point. I don't know what kind of a deductible we've got or what they're doing. But they've got everything that they need.
Keep us posted on that number when you find it.
I will. Okay. I will. And we were working on that actually this week. So.
Okay.
We'll hear something soon.
Sounds good.
The Enterprise Tower. Remember, we were going to lease from the Enterprise Tower. That project slowed down for a while. We've actually been making a lot of good progress here in the last couple of weeks, though. One of the things we're waiting on is Enterprise wanted to complete a structural analysis of the tower. That analysis has been completed, and now the Harris folks and the Enterprise folks are communicating back and forth to make sure that the tower is sufficient to hold the additional weight load. And I'm hearing good progress reports on that, so we're making progress there. The new tower at the Marbleton SO has been built, and the room has been worked out or is being worked completed.
It's done.
Okay.
Cool.
And so we've made good progress there, and hopefully over the winter we've got enough room to get a lot of the work that needs to be done in the dispatch centers and get as much of the equipment installed as we can, and then as available, we'll get access to the towers and finish installing whatever's appropriate on those towers. So that's my. Oh no, I got one more thing to add. Commissioner Bowsman, you had asked for a letter of appreciation for the governor's office and his support.
I have one.
Did you? Okay, that was my concern. I was short time here, but I just wanted to.
And I'll bring that with my business. But I've made one for all of you to sign.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, while we're talking on that, I just want to emphasize that thanks to Shad's work and your help, if it hadn't have been, I feel strongly, if it hadn't have been for the support from the governor, if it hadn't have been for meeting ahead of time with the tribes and having all that work done, that's why we got that record of decision. And without that, I'm convinced we'd still be waiting for a decision, and it might not be what it was.
I agree.
So thanks to everybody that did their homework on that ahead of time, because we actually did the Forest Service work for them.
Yeah, sure did.
And it made it a whole lot easier for them to make the right decision.
I'll just also say that I'm glad we got Shad on our side.
Oh, man, yeah, absolutely.
I'd hate to sit across the table and negotiate with this guy. I'm glad he's on the same side of the table as me.
Okay, Okay, well, I don't have anything further on the radio update. Is there any questions I can answer?
No, I think we're good. So the idea is if you can get some mud poured this fall, you will.
Yes, sir.
Okay, very good.
The new tower that was put in by the Sheriff's Department in Marlton, not a problem with the helipad behind the clinic? Are they going to have to pay attention when they come in there?
So when we requested that, Dave Smith contacted the flight carriers and spoke to the pilots of each one of them, and the response that was provided was that it's commonplace to have obstacles in near those kind of pads. Their request was to make sure that the tower was well illuminated. Mm-hmm. But then additionally, they actually said it'd be beneficial if there was a windsock on the tower that would provide assistance to them, that they could actually see the wind direction as they're approaching. So cool. It's actually a benefit to some degree. But as long as it's well illuminated and they're aware of it when they're coming in, that it didn't pose a hazard. And that was my understanding of it. Dave, do you have anything to add to that?
No, it's pretty common for those guys to deal with obstacles. So we did all the proof of paperwork and filed a 7469 with the FAA. The chief pilot and the ops directors of each flight company that flies into the helipad was contacted and discussed with at length. We actually surveyed the helipad and the tower site because the helipad elevation was incorrect, which is not uncommon. So, it's an obstacle, certainly, but it's a very well-lit obstacle. We went to great lengths with the lighting and used incandescent lighting as opposed to high-intensity lighting. That was at the request of the pilots, because when they come in with their night vision, apparently the LED-type high-intensity lighting, they can't see with night vision, but the incandescent lights really stand out. So we did that, painted it orange and white. And the FAA, just for the record, said we don't have to do anything. We don't have to paint it. We don't have to light it. We don't have to do nothing as far as they're concerned. So all of that was done above and beyond to try and help the pilots.
Cool.
Yeah, thanks.
Good work.
Okay. All right, with that, I'll move into the
Anything else on communication?
I don't believe so.
Okay. Thanks, Sheriff.
Thanks, Sheriff.
Appreciate it.
Thanks, Sheriff.
Dave?
Thanks, Keith.
Yeah, the work on Kismet, the cleanup and the landscaping, so to speak. We've got a burned out building up there that's full of hazardous waste, batteries and things. The site right next to us, KTWO, their building was a complete loss. All that's left is a small concrete slab and a bunch of burnt rubble. We've got written permission from KTWO, which is our immediate neighbor to the south, as well as Central Wyoming College and PBS, which is the next neighbor to the south, to level and landscape their lease spots on the mountain. We've got written permission from the BLM that allows us to do that. They told us we could. We need to move a power transformer that is in the middle of the mountain. The reason we want to do all this is when we go to put our 70,000-pound concrete building up there, we're going to have a large crane up there. That mountain is very slopey because it's a small kind of knife-edge, hogback little ridge thing. It's going to be quite challenging. It's tough just driving a pickup around there. I've got pictures of it if you guys want to see it.
We saw the pictures. You brought us the
those are different
flash drive
than the aerial picture that Rita Donham took. I can show you what we're talking about real quick here.
So just so you guys have an idea of what we're looking at, right? Here's your road. This area right here is a quite a steep slope. If you can't drive a pickup right through there, you have to go right by the building where it's flat. So here's our building. There's no roof. There's what's left of the K2 building. That's our roof right there. There's what's left of the K2 building. This tower has been dropped down. There's a transformer here. The CWC building is here. So from this area here all through there is the three leases combined, and we can level that and push that dirt over here once we get it cleaned. We need to knock this building down with a Traco or a backhoe, whatever, ditto for the K2 site, clean that up, haul that burned up rubbish off, and then we can do the landscaping and put some gravel down or some road base down. And I would request that you guys allow Billy to do that, or at least think about doing that, and I would like to do it last week or the week before on a scheduling thing. We've got good weather right now, and now's the time to get it done. The BLM's okay with it, and we've got all that in writing from the BLM and the other two leaseholders. Moving the transformer is going to be a little more complicated. We've got to get with the power company. I did call Chris with Rocky Mountain Power. He's looking into getting that scheduled. It's going to go over here by the Verizon building, the power line. The primary comes in right through here. That's a utility corridor easement. The BLM's fine if we do it, as long as the transformer stays in their easement. Obviously, we would have to pay for that if we do it. So I don't know what the cost on that is going to be. If we don't move the transformer, which sits right here, it's just a much less of a space that we can level and flatten. And for doing construction work and having large equipment up there, having it a little more level and a little flatter is a big safety issue, especially if the soils are wet. Getting a crane up there and whatnot is going to be challenging. So,
can we get in there right now? Can we turn around?
Yeah, we can get in there and turn around. I can move this truck. That truck is movable. I can start it up and put it down here on the ridge. It'll still be functional when we do that for our equipment. So we can vacate that area to let them work. And with the exception of that transformer that's right in there, there's nothing up there, so they can.
And the other two providers have intentions of rebuilding, or
yes, K2's going to rebuild. I told them they could share our. We've got a drop, a power drop right by the transformer there, just a temporary box that we put in. We've got a cord running over to the truck. I told K2 they could go in the truck for the winter, and I also told them they could use our power. Their requirements are very minimal. They may not have equipment to get back on this year. But I told them if they wanted to, they could use our stuff. And the reason I did that is I want to get everything out of the way so we can go in there with heavy equipment and clean it up now while we've got the opportunity to do it.
Are they going to help pay some for the cleanup as far as their share of it? Or?
I offered that we would do that if they would let us do it. I don't think the cost is going to be that much. That may have been presumptuous on my part, but we're in a situation where we can actually get something done that we will never be able to do again once people start standing up buildings and towers again. Then we can't do anything. And right now, we can go up with big yellow things and do some cleaning. So I would strongly encourage you guys to do that because you're never going to have the chance again.
Okay. To clean up your plan, your thoughts are to haul all the...
It's probably one to two dump truck loads. I mean, our block building has got to get demoed with either a backhoe or a small track hoe. I'm thinking is probably the easiest way. They have about an 8-foot square pad that has about a pickup load maybe of stuff on it. I mean, their stuff is pretty minimal. Oh. There's some old tower equipment and stuff up there that we cut down after it burned because it was very unsafe, and that was at the request of the BLM at my advice, and K2 was okay with it. It was their tower. We got all that in writing before we did it. So,
you're talking that whole thing, a couple of truckloads.
For the rubbish, yeah. It's not a big amount of garbage, and our percentage of it is certainly 80-90% of what's going to get hauled off. The dirt work to move it down, that's, you know, that you're not going to need dump trucks for that, just something that can dig and move either a cat or a tractor.
Yeah, it'll pay to put a cat in there.
They are. They are.
Do we have confirmation from the BLM that we can go in and do all this?
I do, and I can forward you guys the emails from Tracy.
We have to have that.
Yep.
I'd really like something in writing. I'd like a signed.
You want a letter more than an email?
Yeah, okay. I really would. Just to cover our hind ends, if they'd just write a letter, sign it, we'd have it. Okay. I mean, emails are great, but they're not signed.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
I need something from the BLM with a signature on it.
Okay. So.
So I'll tell you what, let's do this then. Joel, if you will act as the go-between between Dave and Road and Bridge,
okay.
And we can get this scheduled when Billy's got the ability to do it and has the manpower to do it.
I'll talk to Billy.
Okay, you talk to Billy.
I'll get a letter from Tracy.
Get a letter from BLM, and then I think we can go for it.
Okay. All right.
Sounds good.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Thanks, Dave.
Thanks, Dave.
See you, Jesse. Right.
Go ahead.
So this is just the regular county fire wardens reports.
I'm actually planning to meet with Todd Hurd next week to talk about the exterior siding on the fire station and a couple other projects. We want to begin work towards planning on the new fire station as well. So I'll have a better update on where we stand with capital improvement projects there. Actually, I guess while I'm bringing that up, we are making progress with the new proposals that we're developing for the new fire apparatus, wildland truck, and the structure truck, and we're working through that process diligently right now. What the general time frame that we're looking for is that we'll be ready for releasing the RFPs on that, and then by the time we put together the build time, it'll be about 18 to 24 months from now that we're actually ready to implement those.
Okay, question.
So way back early when we all, the three of us, started this, you mentioned that you had some drawings from Riverton's fire department. Are you still going to use those to save money, or are we starting from scratch?
So I'm going to defer that decision to Todd Hurd. I'm not a specialist at that in any way, shape, or form. What I understand is because of the additional snow load that we have here, that there'll be some additional work necessary there. I don't know if it's better to try to Band-Aid fix that or what. So I would prefer not to answer that question. I would rather Todd answer that question.
Okay. Shad and I drove by one of those buildings in Fremont County. Pretty nice looking outfit. So if we can Band-Aid fix it, great. But if we can't, then we'll have to go to some new plans. It'd save us some money if we could Band-Aid fix it. But we'll let Todd fill us in on that.
Well, yeah, it just depends on what their ratings were to
start. That's it. My suspicion is not near what we need, but we'll see.
Agreed. Okay. Emergency incidents. We had 20 emergency incidents last month. We've actually had a busy September on top of the Roosevelt fire. We were busy with a lot of additional fires and responses. One of the nice things that we actually had the ability to do was because we were heavily engaged in the Roosevelt fire, our normal operating resources were diminished to some degree. You know, we did prioritize and make sure that we held back sufficient resources to provide coverage for the rest of the county. But because of the uptick and increase in fire activity across the county, I was able to work with the state and bring in what's called severity resources. Oregon actually sent us two engines that we were able to provide assistance at a local level and provide initial attack response capability and really improve our ability to ensure that we were able to respond quickly and capture fires while they were still small and keep them from getting the opportunity to get big. So that actually worked out very, very well, and I was very pleased with the result. Fire investigations. It shows that there was one fire investigation completed in September. We're actually working on a couple of additional fire investigations as well. But we've definitely had an uptick in fire activity, and so as a result, we're doing some additional investigations as well. Public education in September, we did a side-by-side burn prop. If you recall, the Battalion 1 Pinedale did their annual morning pancake breakfast, and that's our prevention day, where the primary intent of that day is to invite the community and to go through various fire prevention related activities provide public education. And then one of the big things we did is we've got that side by side burn prop where we burn one 8-foot by 8-foot room that does not have sprinklers and burn another one that does have sprinklers and give a visual demonstration to the public of the importance of either retrofitting or building new homes that have sprinklers in them. That by all accounts, that was a very successful side-by-side burn there. Our FireWise program is still going strong. I think that with the Roosevelt fire, that there's a lot of opportunity there for lessons learned and maybe we can build on some of the success of some of the homes that did survive that and better understand at a local level and our fuel types and our elevation, how we can work with other urban interface communities in the county and continue to work with our FireWise program and other urban interface communities.
Shad, question on that. Now that fire is done, can you make a, could there a correlation be made that would say that the houses where the homeowners that did some upfront tree cutting, tree removal, thinning to help in the next fire. Can you make the correlation that those homes survived better than the ones that did not?
So I'm gonna give a lengthy answer for this, so I apologize in advance. Anecdotally, absolutely I can. My previous experience, I used to be a FireWise coordinator. I've got a lot of experience working with homeowners to make recommendations, to limb up trees, to cut down hazardous trees, reduce overall fuel load in what's called the defensible space around the home. Without a doubt, there's numerous examples that that kind of vegetation management made a difference. But that alone was not sufficient to be the smoking gun that was the one thing that made a difference whether or not a home survived or not. There's many additional factors that also played a role, specifically the construction material that the home was built from. If a home had wood shake shingle roofs, that makes a very receptive vertical surface that allows embers to land on, and if the wood shake shingles are dry or anything, they're very easily combustible, and then the wood shake shingles would burn, as opposed to a metal roof. So just thinking logically, the materials that the home was built from make a significant difference. Additionally, the decks, imagine a large 20 by 20 deck or however big the deck is. Again, that makes a very receptive surface for when a tree burns and it lofts embers up, burning pine needles and pine cones and even branches and twigs. When those eventually fall out of the smoke column and land on whatever the home or near the home, if they land on a firewood pile or in any number of things like the deck or the roof, that makes a very significant difference. The where the homeowners stack their firewood piles, I've got numerous examples of stories from our firefighters that when the initial flame front went through, they were there within 20 minutes. They were able to return and get back in there to the best of their ability, and if they could get access to the home, they were actually able to spray down water on the homes. And several examples of stories from our firefighters that the pile of firewood logs up to the house was on fire, and they were able to quickly throw that away from the home, or if a lot of times underneath the deck, if the deck was not enclosed, there's oftentimes opportunity for leaves and debris to for the wind to blow and accumulate underneath the deck. Well, if that's one of those housekeeping issues that really made a big difference on the survivability of a home. Several of our firefighters have stories of actually crawling underneath of the decks and pulling smoldering debris out from underneath the decks. So it's not any one specific act or omission that led to the survivability of a home. Another good example is where the home was built. If it was built in the middle of a slope and the fire was coming up the slope, it was very hard to defend that home. Or if the home was built in the middle of a chimney or a box canyon where the winds naturally funnel and bring the fire straight to the home, again, it's very difficult to defend that. So to answer your question, there's a variety of different solutions that when implemented together definitely increase the survivability of the home, but no one single indicator would have made the difference. It takes a lot of different things. But furthermore, I have requested that the Wildfires Lesson Learned Center, it's a national interagency support program, that they can do lessons learned after a fire. I have initiated that conversation and asked that we can look at homes that with receptive homeowners and ask for lessons learned after this fire and see if there's something that we can do to build on some sort of a success or things that did work well. And let's take those lessons learned and try to implement them not only at a local level but even on a state and a national level to learn from what did and what did not work in this urban interface fire.
Okay. Great. Thank you, Shad. Appreciate that. Continue on.
But our smoke detector program is still going very strong. I'm really amazed at the community support from that, and I couldn't be happier. I think it's one of the shining bright spots of our organization that we're able to continue to provide that smoke detector program. Training has the Roosevelt Fire. You'll see that summer training was canceled. We try to do at least one weekend training per month with our organization, and we had originally scheduled a hazmat training. We just we didn't cancel it as much as we postponed it. It's actually going to occur tomorrow instead. But we do have a fire officer one class. It's a big deal to me that our firefighters are qualified for the positions that they perform in. And so we have an ongoing fire officer one class that our firefighters are transitioning from the role of operational personnel to leadership and administration personnel. And so we continue to support that and provide for that. We now have the ability to do a third-party testing to provide Class B driver's licenses for our firefighters in-house and prevent that necessity to drive to Rock Springs and do that testing. And we do have a pipeline awareness class for, because of our oil and gas industry, we wanted to bring in an outside instructor to provide that training for our firefighters. Health and safety, we're continuing with the evac planning for the Sublet Center. Actually, I just got a progress report that they're making some good contacts and working through the project there. Donnie Toth is working closely with Mike Straw to produce that project. Stress tests have been completed. Oh, one of the...
Donnie Toth or Don Walker?
Both.
Yeah.
Both. One of the things that we did that was unusual for me is after the Roosevelt fire, we had several of our firefighters that were evacuated that lived in the subdivisions that were part of that evacuation, and actually some of our firefighters lost homes as a result of the Roosevelt fire. All of our firefighters personally know our friends or family was somebody that was impacted by the Roosevelt fire, and as a result from that. We had some, we had a lot of emotional attachment on this fight, and we had some firefighters that were struggling with some of that, the emotions that were associated with the Roosevelt fire. So I activated a critical incident stress management team. We've actually years ago we stood up a local critical incident stress management team and been providing support and training for them for the last several years. But this, to me, in my opinion, this was bigger than what we could handle locally. And so we had assistance come in from Park County, and they had specialists that do critical incident stress on a regular basis. And they came in and met with our local CISM team, and we had a large formal debriefing and several smaller debriefings, and we have a plan in place to continue to provide emotional and support for the firefighters that are struggling with this. And I think that's a very important component of being the chief of this organization, is that we provide that support for the firefighters that do have problems. And I can give you numerous examples where that support was absolutely critical in my previous career and really in the fire service as a whole. So I'm very pleased with the fact that our health and safety officer was able to bring that together and provide that critical incident stress management debrief for our firefighters that needed that support.
Excellent.
Cooperative services meetings. I don't have near as many meetings that last month as I normally do, but in reality, I probably have daily meetings with all of our cooperators, and I actually attended one just yesterday with the Forest Service, trying to continue to build and improve our partnerships with our state and local and federal cooperators, and I think that's a big part of my job, and I will continue to work to improve that every opportunity I have. And then volunteer hours, I don't think we actually...
That's going to go up.
Yeah.
Your next report.
Yes, sir.
Yep. Thank you, Shad. Do you have anything further for the commission?
I do not.
Gentlemen, anything for Shad?
One question, I guess, and probably the right time to bring it up. It came to my attention that they'll be having some after-action debriefings or meetings, whatever you might call them. Probably one for the actual fire people, and one for the administrative part of it. And it was suggested that perhaps we should have, might be productive to have a facilitator for the administrative team debriefing because of various issues that we're aware of. And I had the thought to call Jessica Clement, who she was a facilitator when we started the Force Collaborative, and she has a pretty good understanding of, I don't know about fire, but I have not called her yet till I got permission from you guys, but to see if she wasn't available, would she know somebody with the expertise in this kind of situation that she could recommend? And if so, what are my costs? I think we're probably looking at one meeting, one trip. And with the board's approval, I would go ahead and look into that and visit with her.
Please do. I think a facilitator at a meeting such as this would be important. It would be necessary.
What we want to do is move forward with lessons learned,
right,
and try and do it in a way that does not cause a lot of division between the federal agencies and the federal and state agencies and, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. If you'd get in contact.
Sound reasonable to you, Chef?
Absolutely. If you'd get in contact with Jessica, that'd be great.
And then I'll follow, depending on her response, I'll get back to Mary.
Do you think we need an after-action meeting with just our group, or do you think we jump right into this action after-action meeting with the big guys? Do we need to jump in with all of our local people first?
What we'd like to do is do an operational after action review first, and have the people with boots on the ground, really is the term, to get together and talk amongst each other and ask for, you know, what we do right, what we do wrong, what can we do better next time, what can we learn from, and how can we be better prepared and for, you know, the next time a fire happens in Sublette County. Based on that operational after-action review, I expect a couple of suggestions for improvement. My thought is that those suggestions for improvement should be, raised up to the administrator's level for potential for policy review and implementation of future policy. So to answer your question, if there's an opportunity for our local county heads and departments to get together and review, I think it would be beneficial to do that before the agency administrator's review, for the same logic that there might be something that comes out of the county review that would be productive to the agency administrator's review and would help for maybe some policy change. So, yes, I do think that would be a bit beneficial.
All right. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, when they have this after action review with the administrators, especially if we're going to get or have a facilitator there, I would like to see that one or more of us had the opportunity to sit in and listen to that meeting.
I think there's a good opportunity for all of us to sit in.
I think
on
any
that.
Of us available.
Anybody that's available.
Yeah,
we need to. That's a great idea. So you talk with Jessica. I'll put some thought into a department head type local action after action meeting, and we'll just go from there.
Sounds very good.
Okay. Do you have any idea of when they might be looking at the federal state agency, that part of the administrative review? Because she will want to know probably what time frame are we looking at.
I have a couple of tentative dates that I'm looking at and trying to identify the availability of facilities and if the agency administrators can attend or not. I'd be happy to work with you afterwards.
If you find a date there, let us know so that we can get our other one scheduled before that.
Okay.
Yeah, make us aware of the dates too.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you, Shad. We appreciate all your hard work, man. You did a great job. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Rest easy.
Thank you, everybody.
All right, Mary, I know you got a load of stuff for us.
We'll have a break before we have a
load of
stuff.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right, have a 5-minute break. This might take a while.